Welcome to episode one of our brand new series, Fat Loss, Metabolism, and Nootropics. In this very first episode, we're unpacking some of the most talked about compounds in metabolic studies, AOD9604, tesamorelin, and semaglutide, from their role in fat metabolism to their impact on energy balance and long-term metabolic health. We'll dive into what current studies are showing and why these peptides are capturing the attention of researchers worldwide. We'll also highlight how reputable sources like BC9 are supporting ongoing studies with high-quality research-grade compounds. So if you're ready to kick off this series with a deep dive into the science of metabolic regulation and the future of peptide research, you're in the right place. Let's get started. Okay, let's unpack this. Before we zoom in on the specifics of these fascinating molecules, maybe let's establish the context first. Why are these particular compounds, AOD9604, tesamorelin, and semaglutide, why are they so, well, central to cutting-edge biomedical research right now?
Yeah, it's really because they offer researchers different windows into tackling some huge global health issues.
You mean things like obesity, type 2 diabetes?
Exactly that. Obesity, type 2 diabetes, that really dangerous visceral fat accumulation, and also NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It's a cluster of related problems.
Right.
And the fascinating thing, I think, for the research community is that these three molecules, they achieve their results through highly distinct mechanisms.
So different pathways to potentially address these issues.
Precisely. For a researcher, that's key. You aren't just looking for a single outcome, like weight loss.
Yeah.
You're trying to understand how different levers control the complex metabolic cascade itself. Different tools for different jobs, if you like.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's break down those mechanisms then, starting with AOD9604. This one has a bit of a unique history, doesn't it? Designed to sort of separate fat burning from growth effects.
That's exactly right. AOD9604 is actually a small engineered fragment of human growth hormone. Specifically, it's the tail end, amino acids 176 to 191.
And the goal was?
The goal was really quite specific, to isolate the lipolytic activity that's the fat-breaking ability of HGH, but without triggering the strong growth hormone or IGF-1-mediated growth signals that come with the full hormone. Those can complicate long-term studies, you know.
Right, the systemic effect.
Exactly. So the idea was a kind of surgical strike on fat cells, and the preclinical studies, mostly in animal models, looked really promising on paper.
What did they show?
They suggested it stimulated lipolysis, increased fat oxidation, and seemed to reduce adipose tissue mass, all without significantly messing with blood sugar levels. It looked like maybe the perfect fat-burning switch.
But there's often a but when translating from preclinical to human studies. The human trial results were more mixed, weren't they? Development stalled.
That's the critical point, yes. The human trials showed, well, limited efficacy for certain endpoints. It just didn't quite deliver the robust results needed.
Yeah.
And development was halted at various stages.
So what's the takeaway for researchers now regarding AOD9604? Is it still a useful tool?
I'd say it offers a really valuable lesson. It highlights just how complex human metabolism is. A single switch might not be enough.
Compensatory mechanisms kicking in.
Likely, yes. The human body is incredibly adaptive. So while AOD9604 might directly affect the fat cell, the overall system response wasn't strong enough for broad clinical use in obesity.
But potentially still useful in the lab?
Oh, definitely. For researchers specifically wanting to study isolated lipolysis,
yeah,
or how specific HGH fragments signal directly at the adipose tissue level without those broader hormonal effects, it remains a valuable tool. It helps understand that specific piece of the puzzle.
Okay, interesting. So if AOD9604 was this sort of targeted fragment approach, tesamorelin takes a completely different route, right? Working further upstream.
Exactly. A very different strategy. Tesamorelin is a synthetic analog of GHRH growth hormone releasing hormone.
So instead of supplying a piece of the hormone,
you're basically telling the pituitary gland, the body's own control center, to release its own growth hormone, but in natural physiological pulses.
And given GH's role in fat distribution, the research focus here has been quite specific.
Very much so. The strongest finding, really the defining one for tesamorelin in research, is its effect on visceral fat, that deep abdominal fat that's linked to so many health risks.
That's the VAT, visceral adipose tissue. The data there seems quite compelling.
It really is. There was a key randomized placebo-controlled trial, often cited, particularly looking at populations with specific fat distribution issues, like HIV-associated lipodystrophy.
And the result?
Over 6 months, the group using tesamorelin saw a significant reduction in VAT, roughly 34 square centimeters on average. Importantly, the placebo group actually saw a slight increase over that same period.
Wow, that's quite a difference.
It is. And there were also modest reductions observed in liver fat. So that targeted clearance of visceral fat is why tesamorelin remains such a powerful tool for specific research models, especially those looking at things like fatty liver or cardiovascular risk tied directly to VAT.
Now, you mentioned stimulating the GH axis. What about safety in these research contexts, particularly concerning glucose metabolism? Was that an issue?
That's always a key question with anything affecting GH. The research showed that, yes, there were some small temporary increases in fasting glucose early on. That's somewhat expected.
Okay.
But the crucial part is that these increases tended to stabilize over time. By the end of the 6-month trial period, the differences in glucose markers compared to the placebo group were minimal and not statistically significant.
So reassuring for researchers using it in longer-term studies focused on fat, not necessarily glucose control.
Exactly. It suggests it could be utilized in research models where the primary endpoint is that fat redistribution without unduly complicating the metabolic picture regarding glucose in the long run.
All right, let's pivot then to the third compound, semaglutide. This one feels like it's really changed the landscape, maybe even redefined the research area recently. The findings seem, well, quite dramatic.
They really are. Semaglutide operates through yet another distinct mechanism. It's a GLP-1 receptor agonist.
GLP-1, glucagon-like peptide 1. Can you break that down simply? What does it mean for metabolism?
Sure. GLP-1 is a natural hormone your gut releases, especially after you eat. It's part of what's called the incretin system. Think of it as your body's own natural meal-finished signal.
Okay.
It does a few things. Helps stabilize blood sugar, slows down how quickly your stomach empties, and crucially, it sends a very powerful signal to your brain promoting satiety, that feeling of fullness.
And semaglutide.
Semaglutide is an analog, a mimic, that essentially activates that same GLP-1 receptor, but much more potently and for longer than the natural hormone. So you're getting a stronger, more sustained signal.
Sort of hitting the brakes on appetite while also optimizing blood sugar.
That's a great way to put it, a dual action. And that really helps explain the kind of results we're seeing in the large randomized controlled trials, the RCTs.
The weight loss figures often quoted are substantial, aren't they? Far beyond what previous pharmacological approaches achieved in research models.
Absolutely. The research highlights are incredibly strong. In long-term studies, using the higher research doses, like 2.4 milligram weekly, we consistently see sustained body weight reductions around, say, 14% to 15% compared to placebo. That's a major shift.
But it's not just about the number on the scale, is it? The research points to changes in body composition, too.
Yes, and this is perhaps the most exciting part for metabolic researchers. Subjects aren't just losing weight. They're losing significant amounts of visceral fat while proportionally preserving or sometimes even slightly increasing their lean body mass.
And preserving muscle is so critical, right? Losing lean mass during weight loss can actually harm metabolism long term.
Precisely. It's often a major pitfall in weight management models. So seeing that favorable shift in body composition is really key.
And beyond body composition, other metabolic markers.
Yes, consistently beneficial effects there too. Studies show improvements like lowering LDL cholesterol, lowering total cholesterol, and significantly improving long-term blood sugar control measured by HbA1c.
So it's acting systemically.
Very much so. It's why it's viewed not just as, say, an anti-obesity compound in research, but as a potential tool for modeling the reversal of metabolic syndrome, because it hits multiple targets simultaneously and shifts body composition favorably.
Okay, so we have three very different approaches. AOD9604 is a targeted HGH fragment, tesamorelin generating GH pulses, and semaglutide as a systemic satiety and glucose regulator via GLP-1. How does a researcher decide which one is the right tool for their specific study?
It really boils down entirely to the specific research question being asked. What exactly are you trying to model or understand?
Can you give some examples?
Sure. If the goal is to model broad-spectrum metabolic improvement, including weight loss, visceral fat reduction, and preserving lean mass, semaglutide currently offers the most robust and validated framework based on the available research.
Okay.
If, however, the primary research objective is very specifically the targeted reduction of visceral adipose tissue, perhaps in a model mimicking conditions like lepidystrophy, then tesamorelin's specific efficacy there makes it a highly valuable tool.
And AOD9604, where does it fit now?
Despite its limitations in human trials for obesity, it remains valuable for fundamental research. If you want to explore the basic science of lipolysis itself, how that specific HGH fragment signals at the fat cell level, isolated from other factors, AOD9604 still has a role in those specific mechanistic studies.
Got it. Now, a practical point that came up in the source material was duration. It seems these effects, especially the really significant ones on body composition or lipid profiles, don't happen overnight.
That is a hugely important practical insight from the research. These are chronic metabolic conditions being studied, and the body's adaptations take time. You simply can't expect to see the full picture with a short-term protocol.
So study design is critical.
Absolutely. The semaglutide trials, showing those big 15% weight loss figures and body composition changes, they involved sustained administration, often for many months, even over a year. Tesamorelin needed 6 months for those significant VAT reductions. Researchers must factor in the biological timescale needed for these deep metabolic shifts when designing their experiments. Otherwise, they risk underestimating or completely missing the true effects.
Which leads us to another critical factor for reliable results: the compounds themselves. All this sophisticated comparison is moot if the actual substance being studied isn't pure or consistent.
Oh, absolutely fundamental. This is where the role of sourcing and reputable vendors like BC9 becomes paramount for researchers.
Why is it so crucial?
Think about reproducibility, the cornerstone of science. If you have impure, inconsistent, or even myth-labeled batches of a research compound, you introduce massive, uncontrollable variance.
So different labs might get different results studying the same thing?
Exactly. Or even the same lab might get different results from one experiment to the next if they use different batches. You're no longer reliably studying the compound's effect. You might just be studying the variability in your supply. It undermines the entire investigation.
So what makes a source like BC9 reliable in this research context? What should researchers look for?
Several key things. First and foremost is purity and rigorous quality control. Providing research-grade compounds that are consistently tested for their identity and purity level is non-negotiable.
And documentation.
Crucial. Supplying a detailed certificate of analysis, a COA, with every single batch is essential. This document confirms the specifications, the purity, the identity. It allows researchers to verify what they're working with.
So they know batch A is the same quality as batch B.
Precisely. That ensures consistency, which is vital for reproducibility, especially in longitudinal studies that might span months or even years, or when comparing results across different labs. You need that reliable foundation.
And ethical considerations.
Yes, that's important too. Reputable vendors are very clear that these compounds are strictly for laboratory research use only. They aren't intended for human consumption. That ethical clarity and focus on supporting regulated research is part of being a trusted partner. Reliable sourcing directly translates to confidence in the research findings.
Okay, so wrapping this up, we've looked at AOD9604, tesamorelin, and semaglutide. Three quite different molecules, all driving really deep investigations into fat regulation, metabolism, metabolic health, but each with its own profile, its own level of evidence, and distinct uses in controlled research.
That's right. I think the key themes are specialization and the importance of sustained study. Semaglutide is currently showing the strongest, broadest evidence for systemic metabolic improvements, especially regarding body composition and visceral fat in diverse research models.
While tesamorelin.
Tesamorelin remains highly effective and valuable for research, specifically targeting VAT reduction, particularly in relevant models. And AOD9604, while not a broad clinical success, still serves that niche role in fundamental lipolysis mechanism studies.
And the common thread tying it all together.
The common thread is that progress depends on rigorous, well-designed research. And that research, in turn, relies absolutely on having access to reliable, high-purity compounds from trusted sources, like BC9. That consistency is what allows scientists to clarify where each molecule truly fits and how it can advance our understanding of metabolic science.
All right, let's leave our listeners with this final provocative thought to consider. Given that many of the most robust metabolic benefits we've discussed, things like improved lipid profiles or the crucial preservation of lean mass, only really seem to manifest after many months of sustained administration in these studies, what kinds of profound long-term insights could researchers potentially unlock if they could utilize standardized, high-quality compounds consistently over multi-year longitudinal studies? What could tracking the precise progression or even prevention of metabolic disease over that kind of timescale truly reveal?